Oh, you might as well go to sleep now. I want to welcome you back from the summer, and as painful as it may be to enter the fall again, at least in terms of calendar and all the routine and schedule brings with it, your life is about to become, in quotes, normal again. But if you've been a part of Bethany for any part of the summer, you know that what is true of you in terms of things becoming normal is not necessarily the case for us. We have had a number of changes over the summer that are going to affect how you worship, how you serve, what goes on here, and so on, not the least of which is the physical changes that have happened in the sanctuary to better facilitate good worship for you. All that we have left to do is some stone to go on the panels in the back and painting, which will hopefully happen this week, and it will be done. And so I would like to thank the committee who worked on the renos, the deacons, the volunteers who helped take in and put away different sorts of things. And especially I want to thank Pastor Johnson, who basically was the project manager for this whole thing. So why don't we give these people a hand for their contribution? And I'm not sure whether you've heard or not, but that's not the end of the changes. We'll be down one senior pastoral staff member at the end of September, as Pastor Wright, who led worship so well this morning, will be taking a church in Kitchener, Ontario. And one announcement that was not made, it's that there is a farewell for the Wrights on Sunday evening, September 22nd. Refreshments at 6, and it'll be a concert, a choir concert that will take place at 7 o'clock, and that will be our chance to give a farewell for them. So I would invite you to attend that. Tickets are not available today, but they will be available next Sunday, and hopefully you get them then, because it gives us an idea of the number of people who will be attending that farewell, okay? And that changes haven't ended there either. At the end of November, Pastor Johnson has resigned as well. So we'll be down two senior pastoral people. But as I've said before and will say again and probably again and again, just to quell any rumors, the decisions for these resignations could have hardly been made more independent of one another. It's not a protest vote against Bethany Chapel. It was just God moving in the hearts of both of these men and their families for their good and for ours, though that may be difficult at times to believe. You know, after reading through the Old Testament, perhaps God figured it's time to test the faith of Bethany Chapel and see whether we have the grit to grind through the next period of time in order to walk into what I believe and trust in God to be a bright future for us. But this is no time for cowards, for those who are too scared to step in or who, because of potential discomfort, will step away. This seems to be a time where the mettle of Bethany Chapel is going to be tested. And whether we pass that test or not will not depend so much on me as it does on you. Because transition is not something that I can do alone. But with the elders and all the others, we will have to transition together, or we will not transition well at all. That's just a fact. We will have to transition together, or we will not transition well at all. As you know, if you've been here in August, we've been looking at what it means to transition. And I've been just speaking a series of "So what's next" out of the book of Nehemiah. Things to expect, what to reject, and what to embrace in the coming period of time. And last week, I talked about one thing that we need to embrace, that being the regular reading of the Word of God. To help you in that reading of the Word of God, you may recall from the beginning of the summer that we said in the fall we're going to read together through the New Testament as a church in community. The Old Testament is tough to get through. But now we're in the New Testament, where you will find that the space between reading and application is so much shorter, so much easier. It's so much better to easier to understand and to apply to your life. It's a comprehensive look at the life of Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, whom we have declared our lives to. At the history of the early church, as these teachings of Jesus and life of Jesus took shape in the different bodies of the churches that were planted and under the guidance of Jesus' disciples become apostles. At the letters that were written to churches and to people to show them how they were to behave and what they were to believe. What we will read in the next 3 months is uber applicable to us as we allow the scriptures to shape us as a church. We've included the reading plan in the bulletin, and it's a yellow sheet in there. And I want to talk about it a little bit because although I followed the Read the Bible for Life plan, I made a couple of changes to it, okay? If we read it the way that it's laid out, and I know that this is the chronological way, we would begin with the birth narratives of Jesus, and then we would move into the rest of the Gospels, epistles, and then end with the book of Revelation. But I've made a change to that, because if you read the Gospels in the summer, you've already read Jesus' birth narratives, then you'll read them again, and then in Advent, around Christmas time, we'll read them yet again. So what I've done is I've moved them to the end, to the end of November, so that it sets up Advent for us, the remembering of the birth of Christ. And it just makes more logical sense. It's out of chronological order, but everybody kind of knows that Jesus must have been born or he wouldn't be doing these things, right? Do we read in the Gospels? The second change is an addition to the RBL plan, which ends on November 30th. As timing would have it, the first day of Advent is the very next day, December 1st, which is a Sunday. So what I did was add Advent readings for the month of December, or till December 24th, to that. They're way shorter readings than you will have been doing, allowing much more time for reflection, and they are grouped around weekly themes that Advent typically follows. So, what you have in the yellow there, that will be available at the Information Center, and it will be online and a bunch of other places, is the reading plan for the fall beginning tomorrow, December 9th, and ending on Christmas Eve, December 24th. By the way, if you are using the YouVersion as your reading plan, what you'll want to do is set it to week 41 starting tomorrow. Okay? So this thing starts tomorrow, week 41. Okay? The way that I'm going to preach through this is exactly the way that I preach through the Old Testament. That being, I'll preach 1 week ahead of where you are scheduled to read. What that means is that you will read into what I have preached, and hopefully that will make one portion of that weekly reading recognizable in a deeper way than the rest of what you may read. It will help make that place feel like home, so that when you come into that text, you know what it's all about. You know how the furniture is laid out, and it will feel comfortable for you to be there. And so please join us in the reading of the New Testament. It will have the power to instruct us and to shape us and to help us transition in a way that will honor the God who gave us the book. But today, I want to finish that short series entitled, So What's Next, by looking again at the book of Nehemiah, specifically chapter 3 and some assorted other verses, and we're not going to stand and read the whole thing just because it's so lengthy, but I do invite you to have it open in whatever form you have it, so that you can see that what I say is actually there. So we're transitioning. And if you've watched the news over the past couple of years, especially the past couple of months, you've seen one bad transition front and center. That being Syria, where the government fights and savagely kills its own people who are trying to bring about change and want reform. And we have probably seen enough transitions done badly in nations and companies to know that the road that is paved towards a transition is typically full of landmines. So, what would a healthy transition look like? What is the good that people would see in Bethany Chapel if we did this thing well? What would be displayed among us if people were, at the end of this time, able to point to us and say, now that's a church who transitioned well. When our time comes, we want to talk to them so that we can do it the same. Well, in Nehemiah chapter 3, we're given another look at what a healthy transition looks like. At the beginning of the series, I said that we would look at what could be expected, what could be avoided, and what we should embrace. And last week we looked at the first activity that we should embrace, that being regimented Bible reading. Today we will see the second activity that should be embraced, and that is an embrace of sacrificial and passionate service by the entire church body. An embrace of passionate and sacrificial service by the entire church body. What does that service look like? From chapter 3, we see at least three characteristics of what that sacrificial, passionate service would look like. And the first is this: everyone taking responsibility for a part in the transition. Everyone taking responsibility for a part in the transition. You read chapter 3 and it's just a list of people who were involved. Them and their friends and their first cousins all building on the wall. In other words, during their transition, everyone took responsibility for a part, a section of the wall, an area of the wall. They each took a part in the transition. Now notice that no one volunteered to do it all. No one volunteered to build the wall themselves. You know, me and my four brothers, pretty strong, we know how to use stones and stuff. So why don't we do it? It would have burned them out. Their great, 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 great grandchildren would probably finish the wall this year, maybe, if the Romans hadn't destroyed it in 70 AD. And having to do it alone would have turned the Wailing Wall into a screaming wall, because someone would have taken on all of the responsibility rather than just the piece that God has called them to. Everyone took responsibility for a part of the wall, and no one took responsibility for having to do it all. Now, as we transition, we're going to have obvious gaps where we're going to need your help in covering them. We will make those needs known and would ask that you volunteer as God prompts you for that section, for that part. Because embracing passionate and sacrificial service means that everyone will have a part in the transition to come. The second characteristic of such service is that the entire church works closely with one another. Closely. We already addressed the background noise that was going on while the building was happening. The presence of critics who were criticizing what was built and them who built it, who created and circulated rumors about leadership trying to get as wide a hearing and thus dissension as possible. And although this rumbling was in the background, Nehemiah admits, and he admits that it disheartened the workers, the people nevertheless persevered to build together this wall. And they did it closely with one another. The key phrases that show this closeness, at least in my version, the key phrases are used 23 times in 32 verses. And the phrases are, and next to him, and after him. And you just see people lining up right next to one another. It communicates that the people were close together. So this, you're a person working on the wall and you become frightened or discouraged, or you mash your thumb with a hammer and you want to quit. You can just look sideways and you can see another group or person working towards the same goal. Closeness of proximity along with unity of purpose is powerful. And Nehemiah believed that this closeness of proximity was so important that he did something in the midst, or at least around the threat of attack, that was quite striking. You don't know unless you look at a picture of the old city versus the new walls that were built. Derek Kidner is a really good Old Testament scholar, and in his commentary on Ezra and Nehemiah, he quoted a woman named Dr. Kathleen Kenyon, whose excavations in the 1960s reveal that Nehemiah's wall hugged the crest of the Kidron Valley, whereas the earlier part of the wall had gone down in the valley. Let me show you a picture of it here. The Kidron Valley would be down here. Those pictures are really hard to, or those colors are hard to tell apart. But here's the old wall in blue. See how much bigger that is? Here's what Nehemiah built. See how much intentionally smaller that is? Why would he build it smaller than it was before? Well, because he cut back on the size of the wall to keep the volunteers as close as possible to one another. He could have spread them out and built the other wall, but he wanted them close. I'm not sure whether our transition is going to mean that some ministries are cut back or eliminated because they're not accomplishing our purpose, or they're taking volunteers and having them do 100 things when we really need 10 things done, or not. But what Nehemiah demonstrated is that no matter whether our wall of transition, what we're investing in during this time, is shortened or not, we need to remain close to one another, in contact with one another, if we're going to do this well. Embracing sacrificial and passionate service means that we work closely with one another. A third characteristic of that kind of service is that there were Jews who were willing to work outside of their area of expertise and training. I mentioned this back in June when I just did a really high overview of Nehemiah in terms of rebuilding a city after Calgary had flooded. But in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 3 it reads, "And next to him," there's your phrase, "Uzziel, the son of Hahiah, of the goldsmiths, made repairs. And next to Hahiah, one of the perfumers, made repairs and restored Jerusalem as far as the broad wall." Both of these men, a perfumer and a goldsmith, had specialized knowledge and hands skilled in detailed work. The ability to mix together oils and herbs and scents to create Old Spice, right? Or Brut for the warriors, right? The goldsmith with the ability to smelt and carefully sculpt and shape gold. And here they were, building a wall. Both of these men's knowledge was pretty much useless when it came to building the wall. No one cared how you smelled as you built. It was a deodorant-free job site. No one would want a certain inscription made on a stone before it was put into place. All that mattered was that the next stone was put into place and mortared well, and then put another one on top of it. And yet they were willing to volunteer for work for which their training didn't matter a fig, an activity that would have insulted their knowledge and fine-tuned skills had they let it. But because they saw a need and had the basic skills to meet that need, they came together in unity to work along with the rest of the gang. And there are going to be things in our transition that will not require your specialized knowledge or honed skills, but will require your person, your body, your willingness, and your time. For example, 2 weeks ago, we moved all of the pews out of the sanctuary, in quite short order, actually. And we had doctors and engineers and pastors and teachers and accountants and tradespeople and all kinds of other people with skills moving pews. Why? Because it fit their specialized knowledge and honed skills? No. But because they had hands and legs and arms and backs and brains. and were willing to give some time to what needed to be done. There will be more such things that don't require specialized knowledge and honed skills. And the argument, I don't really know how to do that, is really an insult to your own intelligence for these sorts of things. But we will need you in them. All that being said, though, alas, there will still be some, in, as there were in Nehemiah's time, who felt that work on the wall was beneath their dignity or station in life. Verse 5 of chapter 3 says, moreover, next to him, the Tekoi, I don't know how to say that, Tekoites, made repairs, but their nobles did not support the work of their master. In the message, Eugene Peterson renders this text to read that the nobles refused to get their hands dirty with such work. They considered that work to be beneath their dignity, which is a statement of arrogance on the one hand and separation on the other. Where working together calls for closeness, pride and arrogance and unwillingness to get dirty creates a separation there. I would suggest to you that as we contrast these two groups, the goldsmith and the perfumer on the one hand, and the nobles on the other hand, it shows us that in order for a transition to go well, we need people who are not too proud to do what needs to be done, even if it's not fun, even though they may have so much more skills, so many more skills than what that requires. People who will do the jobs, the menial tasks, the things that mean getting one's hands dirty and stepping out of one's comfort zone. That's what it means to transition well. Embrace sacrificial, passionate service, and that being done by the entire body here. And if you're sitting here, that means you. Now, the way that I'm talking might make it sound like the next period of time will be a lot of work. And if that's what you're hearing, perfect. You've heard exactly what I've said. That is what I'm saying. This is going to require all hands on deck. But there's a chance that it might not only sound like a whole bunch of work. It might sound like a whole bunch of work that I would rather not be a part of. Avoid at all costs. I would rather sleep in than show up. I would rather step back than step forward. I would rather stay clean than get dirty. I would really prefer to spend my spare time on my enjoyments than to invest in God's engagements. So why should I bother stepping up and volunteering? Why should I seek to work closely with others? Why should I be willing to work outside of my expertise and skill area just because there is a need? I'd like to give you three reasons for it. In chapter 4, verse 19, Nehemiah says this, I said to the rest of the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, the work is extensive and we're separated on the wall far from one another, but at whatever place you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there, our God will fight for us. He's saying that even though we've shrunk the wall, there are still places where the only person you're going to see is somebody working way down there and a group of people working way down there. But the trumpet sounding was to marshal the forces because of danger so that they could engage in war for the sake of the wall. The trumpet was a rallying call to arms to prepare for battle, to protect the transition from the old reality to the new reality. I don't think we're in any less of a battle than they are, although we don't have human people going against us necessarily. It's more spiritual in nature, the warfare we're involved with. The Apostle Paul said that we don't fight against flesh and blood, but against rulers, against powers, against the world forces of darkness, against forms of wickedness in high places, and they are seeking to destroy and divide that which we are trying to build and move towards the next chapter of life for this church. And we need to serve sacrificially and biblically and passionately because we are engaged in a spiritual warfare to protect this transition. We are. It just doesn't feel that, but we are. So I would suggest that time spent in the Word as groups, such as connecting groups and other Bible study groups that were mentioned, is a response to the sound of the trumpet for war, calling for togetherness and community, for learning more about God, for praying for strength for one another and protection over this next period of time as we transition. I would further suggest that every Sunday morning the trumpet sounds, only it sounds a lot like your alarm clock. It's a call to gather together as a worshiping community and is a time for war. In worship? Absolutely. You know, there's a fascinating phrase used twice in the book of Numbers that translators have kind of struggled to translate because it doesn't make sense. What they've translated to say is, and it's describing the role of the Levites and the priests who were in charge of worship, and it says that what they did was to perform a service. What it literally says is that they are warring a warfare in worship. And what the priests did by virtue of their natural birth, born into the priestly line to do that, we must do by virtue of our new birth as Christians. Because the second that we said yes to Jesus, we will follow you wherever you want to go, we entered a battle which we cannot fight alone, which we must fight for one another. In a battle in which we will see God working among us. Therefore, we need to rally to the trumpet call of prayer and service. Because this transition is a battleground, not a cakewalk. There's a second reason why we ought to serve. Not just because we're in a spiritual battle by virtue of our new birth, but so that we are able to see God's divine enabling and victory through the process. To witness God's enabling power and victory through this process. From the time that Nehemiah challenged the elders in chapter 2 onward, whenever he encountered something, any opposition, he went to God because he knew that God was the one who would win the battle and win the day. From the beginning to the end, he prayed to God. He answered the critics to the building efforts by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will arise and build." In the end, it is God fighting for us who will make this happen. He will fight for us as we work for him. And believe it or not, he is far more interested in our victory than we are. He has far more invested in the progress of this church, having given the life of his son to birth it, than we could ever have invested in it. And so as we come together, we do so to work and watch him enable and bring about victory. Finally, we sacrifice and passionately serve for the survival of our faith in our homes and churches. For the survival of our faith in our homes and churches. Watch for the common phrase in these verses if you want to look down at them. Look halfway through verse 23. "And after them Azariah, the son of Messiah, the son of Ananiah, carried out repairs, each in front of his house." Halfway through verse 28. "Above the horse gate, the priests carried out repairs, each in front of his house." Verse 29, "After them, Zadok, the son of Immer, carried out repairs in front of his house." Now, what's the common theme that links these men's work together? That they're working beside or in front of their home. I would imagine that wherever possible, Nehemiah made sure that these men were able to work in front of their houses. Because can you imagine the difference in motivation between building the sheep gate and looking behind you and seeing empty sheep pens as opposed to building a wall to protect your own family and home. The stones would be so much sturdier, their placement so much more exact, the mortar so much more substantial. I mean, I would bet my whole savings account, which frankly isn't a lot, but I'd bet it anyway, that no parts of the wall were stronger than those built by these men who had their houses behind them. You would have seen an exponentially higher desire to serve well because they would know that the future of their family depends on the quality and quantity of their work on the wall. I dare say, for many of us here, that what we build by God's grace and our sweat and time over the next number of months and years is going to be the Bethany Chapel that our children will inherit. You can leave the work to others. You can leave the work half done. But just do so knowing that you are going to hand the leadership positions and the keys to the doors of this church to your children someday. So that what you build or refuse to build will directly determine the strength and the longevity of what it is that you give them. In his book, Think Orange, Reggie Joyner says on page 116, "There is no excuse for churches full of wise and savvy men and women who believe in God and know the stakes are high to remain immobile while the walls of home and church are broken down. We serve and serve well together because whatever we build or fail to build will become the inheritance for our children." And you know what else? If your children are old enough and at all perceptive, perhaps even sitting in the service this morning with you, they will have already heard what's going on here and the call to service. And they will watch your response or lack of response, and they will learn their habits of service by watching yours. So that if your service during today's whatever day's transition is pretty optional, half-hearted, their future service in an hour of need will be exactly the same, or perhaps non-existent. And then there will be no keys to hand to your grandchildren, because the church will have faded away and they won't be interested anyway. We must serve sacrificially together because what we build or fail to build will be our children's religious inheritance. But I guess the choice of whether we dig or run away remains with us, doesn't it? I love the opening lines, and in fact the whole speech that Theodore Roosevelt delivered entitled "The Strenuous Life." He begins, "I wish to preach not the doctrine of ignoble ease, but the doctrine of strenuous life, the life of toil and effort, of labor and strife. To preach the highest form of success comes not to the man who desires mere easy peace, but to the man who does not shrink from danger, from hardship or bitter toil, and who out of these wins splendid triumph." Later in the speech he says, "It's not the critic that counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again because there's no effort without shortcoming, who actually tries to do the deed, who knows great enthusiasm and great devotion and spends himself on a worthy cause, who at worst, if he fails, at least fails daring greatly. Far better to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows neither victory nor defeat. He's right. Moving forward, we are going to need those willing to live the strenuous life. Will you be such a one? You know, I read of a church that was small enough that they would have baptisms in a lake and they could all be there for them. And they would take the candidates out of the water and they would build a fire on the beach. And they would sit them around the fire so that they could stay warm and dry off. And then in a certain part of the service, or at the time, they would gather in another circle around the back of them. And one at a time, they would say, beginning with one person and moving to the next, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. If you ever need blank, call me." Next person, "Hi, my name is so-and-so. If you ever need this, call me." That's church. That's community. That's what we are going to need going forward. And you know what? I have already had three offers worded almost exactly like that without even asking. You three know who you are. If you want to send me an email this week, you probably won't have to say your name because it'll be on the email address unless it's wacky. But you could say, "My name is so-and-so. If you ever need this, call me." And the day just come when I might or someone else might. Another way that you can do this is to take a look at that green form in your bulletin where it indicates areas of ministry that are already going on. If you're already involved, you don't have to check it off again. But if you want to be involved new, check it off. And there's a box just inside the door of the gym where you'll go for lunch. You will be contacted if you're willing to be involved. A healthy transition includes the embrace of sacrificial, passionate service by the entire church body. Amen?